There's a tradition in Buddhism of using your meditative calm to help you reflect deeply on certain topics. And I'll offer you a series of reflections with the aim not so much of ending with understanding, but at the end, ending with a question. It's considered very important to be able to find some essential question that comes out of the depths of your being. Very helpful. Let your reflections be calm, unhurried. Perhaps connected to your body as you reflect, feeling your body. So the first reflection is for you to think about, or what is the deepest knowing or values that you organize your life around? Is there some deep spiritual truth or some understanding, some truth that your life experience has led you to? What's the deepest knowing that you know? And perhaps connected to that, or perhaps not, in your calm, intimate moments with yourself, what is your deepest intention? What is the deepest aspiration you have? Perhaps not settling for the first thing you think about, but kind of probing further, deeper down, under it, behind it. If the intention you state is in the negative, somehow or other the absence of something, you might try restating it positively. Your deepest intention. And then reflect on what gets in the way of you following through on your deepest intention. What gets in the way of living connected to your deepest knowing? What are the obstacles? And in thinking about what you most deeply know or your deepest intention, there's no need to measure yourself against some idea of the appropriate depths. Just whatever is accessible, available to you today, here. Your deepest intention and what gets in the way. And then in reflecting on these things, your deepest knowing, your deepest intention, the obstacle. Is there some question, some essential question that you have coming from that? Something you'd like to understand or know? Something you'd like to resolve? Is there some question that you could pose that you would imagine would make a big difference if you could know the answer? Shortly, I'll ring the bell to end the sitting. And then if any of you would like to ask your question, I will try to respond the best I can. Perhaps as briefly as you pose the question. I'll try to be respectful of where the question comes from. And see if I can respond in kind. So, would anybody like to share their question or ask their question? Yes?
How can I make sense of this experience?
It helps if you love it. The first thing that occurs to me is that you need to be able to offer up both. Both the simplicity of the bread and the richness of the luscious fruit. And if you can't offer one, you probably can't offer the other. And how do you offer it? Where's your altar?
You're asking.
Where's your altar? So you have to answer that question yourself. But I encourage you to offer both sides of the dream.
To the gentleman who asked the question, how can I understand or
make sense
of this experience? And I'm not sure if you said in allowing it or in loving it.
In loving it. In loving it, you'll understand it.
How can you love a negative experience? How can you love a negative experience?
I don't know if you can love a negative experience, but the negative experience shouldn't stop you from loving. So there's a state of love that doesn't relate to an object. So when you encounter the negative experience, it shouldn't interrupt your loving. Yes?
Does the concept of accepting change mean we can accept extinction of many species in the world?
What do you mean by accept?
Well, I guess I wonder, should I be angry? Should I try and do something? Or is it okay because it's part of change that species go away?
I think the answer is yes to both. Lots of species have already passed away, are extinct. And if there isn't some kind of acceptance of their already being gone, you'll suffer. The ones that are in the process of being extinct, I think you need to have a wise relationship to that. And if you can make a difference, please make a difference.
How can I stop trying to prove that I'm a nice, lovable person and just know that I am?
I think it helps a lot if you become really familiar with the tendency to want to be liked, to want to be a lovable person. Just see the suffering of that, see the movement of that really, really well. And in seeing it really well, eventually you'll let it go.
Can I see more clearly the point with which I begin suffering?
How can you see more clearly the point where you begin suffering? I don't know if you need to. Just when you do notice you're suffering, whenever that is, then just relax. Because you know an alternative. So go to that alternative. And the fact that maybe it took a few minutes to realize that you're suffering, it's okay for you. Yes?
One of my obstacles to my deepest intensity is my reactivity. How my feelings will bubble up before I get a chance to get in and intercede. And I don't know exactly what to do about that.
And I'm not sure what to say in response, except that your deepest intention, your deepest knowing, whatever that might be, feed it so that it becomes really strong. It grows in strength and power so that your reactivity somehow is balanced by the strength of your intention and your deeper knowing. So whatever you can do to feed it, to follow through on it. Yes?
My intention to be compassionate and helpful is thwarted by my fears of engulfment and abandonment.
Is thwarted, was that the word?
Thwarted. By my fears of engulfment and abandonment. I wonder what I could do about that.
Hearing you, you know, just taking that in as you say it, I would encourage you to have a lot of compassion for yourself. Cultivate compassion. So it's not so much a matter of fixing this problem as it is holding who you are and that tension between those two things with lots of caring concern, a lot of compassion. And keep remembering that question. Some questions shouldn't be answered too directly, but rather are questions that should be kept alive in the forefront, and can always be working with the question and massaging it and looking at different angles, and maintaining a question like that, I think, really in the forefront, you know, with compassion for yourself, can make a difference over the long term. First, you have to see them, and I think it helps a lot if you can develop mental stability, calm, concentration. So, if in meditation practice or in some ways, the quieter you can get your mind, the more concentrated you can get it, the more likely you are to see those filters. And if you see them really clearly, then you can either let go of them sometimes, or you might see them there, but in seeing them clearly, you're not going to be so influenced by them. You might be able to see around them, see the alternative. Sounds like you're partly oppressed by your sense of responsibility. Is that right?
Yeah, I feel I think almost God, whoever that is angry at me. I'm probably not giving what I have to give there, but it's kind of wanted.
So I imagine that that tension you're feeling probably manifests in many other areas of your life too. Just more acute here. Is that accurate?
More acute.
But is this a common phenomena for you to feel this guilt around some sense of responsibility? And
I haven't looked at in these terms, but it might be.
So what you might do is look at your sense of responsibility, and
it's a spiritual kind of responsibility. I feel almost like, oh, this God or something. Uh-huh.
And my wish for you is that you could discover how to be at rest in your own psyche, in your own heart, and realize that you're not responsible for other people.
Self-pity of not trusting that there will be enough left for me, whether it's time or, you know, an ice cream cone, or, you know, just it could be anything big or little, but it feels like that. So I guess I was looking for a word for it, sort of like self-pity or something, or want, or kind of self-protection becomes a barrier to being able to let go of that and just simply trust that it will take care of itself. If you have any suggestions for how to cultivate an ability to trust that one's needs do get met. And it's like the, if I can remember that the giving gives me more pleasure anyways, and yet in the moment sometimes that's not where I'm at. It's more like, you know, I just want to go off and sit by the beach. And instead that becomes sort of, that's when I say things or do things that I don't feel skillful about.
What would going to the beach do for you?
Recharge me, uh-huh. Or just give me that kind of quiet space that sometimes there's not enough of.
Yeah. And the tension is you don't have time for both?
Yeah.
Nothing comes to my mind. Do you have an answer?
I guess it, to me what feels like would help would be to try to bring the beach into the moment. It's like you don't have to necessarily go there to have that peace. But the challenge of cultivating the peace in the chaos of, you know, the kids and the phone ringing and the clamoring, it's that's the challenge, is to sort of how to not dissolve into self-pity in that moment and instead have gratitude for, you know, all that's great about it. It's a personality challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can very well understand what you're talking about. In the times when you do have, when you can step out of your role as a mother of three children and work and all the things that you do, those moments, make sure those moments are high quality, you know, so that at least you can get a little bit of that recharging and a little bit of that peace. Ideally, of course, you'd be able to find it. You wouldn't have such a sharp separation between personal time and interpersonal time. And you'd find how to be at peace of being at the beach in the middle of screaming children, ideally. But until you can attain that ideal, and if you only have very short periods of time to kind of recharge yourself, make sure that's what you do.
In answering your questions, take for example intention, and I have intention for some direction. How do I develop the faith that that's going to all work? How do you nurture that part of you that, you know, 5, 10, 15 years from now, you know, things are going to be moved in that intention?
Great, good question. So the question is, when he has an intention, a deep intention, and how can he have faith that following through on that intention is going to bring benefit in 5, 10, 15 years? So where does the faith come from that's worthwhile pursuing it? And I think it's a very, very interesting question, very important question. And I do know that we are changed for the better over long periods of time. And part of the benefit of practice, you know, we need to have the patience and the long-term vision that, you know, in 5, 10, 15 years, you know, we'll be changed. I can see small changes I made in my life, you know, 20 years ago, you know, led a certain path of development that, you know, some degree I think changed who I am. This is kind of a personal answer for me, that I think it's very important that the intention we have can also be fulfilled in the moment. That there's something deeply satisfying about the choice we make about how to encounter the next moment. That it's fulfilled in the next moment. So it feels rewarding just because doing it is rewarding. If we want to become more peaceful, you might, you know, if you follow a particular spiritual practice, in 20 years become a much more peaceful person, less afraid and all kinds of things. But hopefully the steps there are steps of being peaceful each step. And that even though you're not that peaceful, it's the fact that that next step was a peaceful step. It feels right. The faith is confirmed in that step. Oh yeah, I feel more... Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So that don't only look for in the far future, but find out how your spiritual practice is in some way fulfilled in the present, somehow satisfying, deeply satisfying for you. So it's not an exchange. I'm going to sacrifice this, I'm going to huff and puff now, so that I can get something, you know, far down the line. That's the exchange model of spiritual life, I think, is the setup for a lot of suffering. But rather see if you can find some way that it's really deeply satisfying while you're doing it. And so that in a year from now, the Buddha comes here and says, you know, Ken, you really followed the wrong path. That was really, you know, that path you're following, you know, you better stop, because in 20 years, that's going to take you, you know, some, you know. And you say, well, okay, you listen to the Buddha and you say, okay, I guess I'll stop doing that. But I'm really glad I did that year. That was very satisfying at the time. I don't know if that's the best example. Hopefully you got the point. Yes?
What you describe is exactly what I feel coming here, that I have this intention of trying to find a better way in my life and take more time to reflect. And often I wonder if it is worth it, because I don't participate very much in many things you do, but whenever I come here, I find it very satisfying, really deeply satisfying, and I don't know why.
So that was a great, great observation, and exactly the question is, that okay?
When I'm left not knowing whether it's the right thing for me to do. But even so, my mind tells me I don't participate enough, or I don't do this, I don't do that. Whenever I come, it's really satisfying.
Oh, wonderful. I'm happy to hear that. And so your mind says you could do more, you should do more.
Right.
and your heart says, this is really satisfying. Listen to your heart. At some point, so you're saying right now there's some kind of urge, some kind of feeling, this is really satisfying to do what you're doing here. You don't quite understand it, maybe, but it's really satisfying for you. At some point, it might happen that you feel the same kind of inexplicable urge to do more, to do some more retreats or whatever, meditate more, whatever more it might be for you. And until that time, maybe just be really content that you found something satisfying. And the more you trust that deep satisfaction, and the more you let the satisfaction you are finding, let it seep into you, the more I think I trust that that'll allow you to unfold in a way that is your unfolding. And it might lead you to going deeper into this tradition. It might lead you going deeper into your tradition of, if you have a kind of tradition of birth, that's a different spiritual tradition, it could actually lead you back there. Or it could lead you to something completely different. I don't know where it'll lead you, but I have a lot of faith in that heart of yours, that you know it's finding that deep satisfaction. And if you nourish that and support that and protect it from your judgments. I think the battle is in the wrong direction then. And the battle shouldn't be with time, it should be with your desires. And perhaps battle is the wrong word, but you were the one who brought the fighting.
How it feels.
It doesn't mean necessarily you have to get rid of your desires, but you're going to need to get a much wiser relationship to your desires then. It's your desires which are oppressing you, not time.
Develop a more skillful relationship with my self-judgment, in particular feeling undeserving.
How can you develop a more healthy relationship with self-judgment and feeling that you're undeserving? What goes through my mind is to respond differently on those two different issues. Self-judgment, one of the interesting things to do with that is to ask yourself what the function is of having self-judgment, and what why is it there? What benefit are you trying to get for yourself by being self-judgmental? So it's kind of looking at the question very differently. What do you think the benefits are for you? What are the benefits you're trying to get for yourself by being self-judgmental? So reflection from others that you're okay. And why do you think you're motivated to want to get that reflection from others?
Because I have a hard time holding myself in that way.
Uh-huh. Accepting myself. Accepting yourself. And what's the suffering there? Of not holding yourself with love. What's your pain?
I guess it's a recognition that I'm not gentle with myself and a desire to be more gentle. Ultimately, so that I can be with other people.
So it's pretty. So this is something you're familiar with. This pain of being harsh with yourself, self-judgmental, feeling you're undeserving, and if you feel that pain, is there any compassion for yourself? Feel the pain, and then see if you can meet it with compassion. Because certainly, I hope that certainly you can feel how important it is to have compassion for your pain, for this tendency. And the healing maybe is found through starting to having some kind of self-love, there's some compassion. I'm confident you have the ability to have that compassion. And the unfortunate thing about compassion is that it arises in contact with that suffering. So don't be afraid of the pain. And what I suggest is that the self-judgment are often a way of avoiding the pain. So you might feel your pain. And then as we come to the end of this session this morning, perhaps some of you would be feel okay about just going around and stating your question that you had at the end of the reflection without any, I won't answer. It might be nice just to hear the range of questions. And maybe it's easier for some of you to speak your question if you know you're not going to be responded to. Years ago, I did a period of questions and answers, a little bit different, quite different from how we did it here. I just said, are there any questions tonight? And I was going to write down the questions and then respond to a series of them in a row. But it was so interesting to hear all the questions that we spent 45 minutes having questions. And there was no answers given at all. Thank you. It's a good question. Why did I decide to drive an hour to find the right Sangha?
Why do I need to have a question?
Why do I need to have a question?
is this habit of taking exception to things?
What is this habit of taking exception to things? So my question is, why should I have a question? Was the last question, right? And I don't know if we need to have a question, but I think questioning having is very, very helpful spiritual practice to have some healthy sense of doubt. Where you're doubting what your experience is. There's a healthy way of doubting asking, what is this? I think the Vipassana question always, the essential question of Vipassana is, what is this? What is this experience? What's happening now? And to kind of keep that as a question, always wondering, not taking anything for granted, but always kind of interested in what's there. And I understand that life is always an open, life is always open system. Being an open system, it's always changing. And there's never any fixed understanding that's going to work. And so you have an understanding that works right now, but it's not going to work in the next moment, in the next hour, next day. So to have this sense of kind of healthy sense of doubting, healthy sense of questioning is very, it seems appropriate enough for me. And also questioning by having the art of asking questions and then honing the question, developing the questions, clarifying the question is one way of clarifying one's inner life, one's spiritual life. I had a Zen teacher who didn't want to see his students very often for interviews because he wanted the students to do most of the work themselves. And otherwise people came with, you know, all their life problems and issues and, you know, and for answers and solutions. And what he wanted people to do was to hang out with their issues and keep refining the issue, clarifying the question, and get down to kind of the really core essential aspect of what's really most important in the question. So if someone came and said, you know, I'm thinking of changing my job, what do you think? He didn't want to hear that. It's a good question, but he wanted you to kind of work with that question, see deep below that question. If you really, down in the kind of in your deepest heart, what is motivating that question? What's the source of that question? And it would take months sometimes for us to kind of stay with these kinds of issues and work with them and reflect on them and look at different angles and keep questioning them. And then we'd come to him with the core question. And then he would, respond, and hopefully that way there'd be much more, useful response. But more importantly, I think he was training us to be our own teachers, training us to find the answers for ourselves. So I think it's very, very helpful to question. Anyway, I hope that this was helpful for all of you. It kind of felt like a rather than 45-minute meditation, an hour and a half meditation this morning, sitting here with all of you. I appreciated a lot hearing the questions I heard. And I sense the kind of, for the most part, a sense of serious presence and listening to other people and to oneself. Maybe some of you who didn't talk, maybe were processing your own questions and concerns. And hopefully that was useful. Well, thank you all very much, and I wish you a good next couple of weeks for those of you who come on Sundays, and I'll be here in 2 weeks for our potluck.